Session number 822, Colonel Alan Jackson, Reel 1.
Colonel, would you like to say something about your background before you joined the army?
Yes, my family came from North London, Finchley, and we were quite a large family, six in all, and my father was a member of the London Stock Exchange. And the boys went to Christ College at Finchley, and which was pretty good educationally, and also had a cadet force. And I was always very interested and took a large part in the workings of the cadet force. I had no pre-service occupation before, after leaving school, and my reasons for wanting to join the Royal Tank Regiment, Royal Tank Corps, I'm sorry, were that I was interested in mechanical things, and when a youngster I had seen tanks at the Lord Mayor's show in 1918 and always had a wish to join. And from Christ College I went on to the Royal Military College at Camberley, which was an 18-month course. And the Royal Tank Corps demanded a very high standard of pass, and managed to achieve this. Came into the Royal Tank Corps in January 1931.
Colonel, what year did you join the Royal Military College then?
In mid-1929.
And what type of course were they then giving? What sort of syllabus did you have for that course?
It was a very general course, and at that time was gradually becoming more academic. But it was still pretty energetic in the way of riding and shooting and carrying out practical engineering work on field works and things like that. But there was a lot of academic work at the same time.
What sort of tests did you have to take before you joined, Colonel?
The civil service examination for entry, which was, I suppose, about O-level standard of the present day.
And when you were on the course, what do you think was being tested of you? What were they looking for, do you think, on the course?
I think they were really looking for what you might call stickability. You were kept at it the whole time. You were really fully stretched for everything, and you had to select pretty well what you specialized on. But there was still time for a lot of games and sports if you wanted to do it.
You joined the army with a view to going into the RTC. How many others would you say of the course that you were on wanted to go into the RTC? Say percentage, could you give us that idea?
No, I couldn't really, but it was a total of 9 joined at Bovington in that January, and I suppose at the Royal Military College there were in the area of 120, 130, something like that, in the senior division who would have been commissioned that year. A large number went to the Indian Army because of practical considerations. The pay was very much better, and the life was quite different.
Would you know how much better the pay was in those days, Colonel?
No, I can't remember that.
Was there an appreciable difference between the two?
Well, really, at that time, you didn't pay a lot of attention to things like that. You hoped that you'd be able to scrape along and left it at that. Now, I can't tell you exactly what it was.
What about the attitude of those who were joining older arms? Did they look upon you with a view that you were possibly swats for this special qualification, or you were looking being different going into an arm such as the RTC in those days?
No, not a bit. I mean, it was quite a quite an accepted thing that you should be interested in a mechanical side. And in fact, at the Royal Military College, they had started a mechanical workshop, and you were encouraged to carry out some work of your own if you wanted to. And two of us, in fact, bought old cars and renovated them while we were there, which proved extremely useful for some time after we joined.
Did any of those who were going to India use this facility?
I really couldn't remember that. I don't know.
Now, you're going to an arm, possibly, where you didn't have to have quite such a large personal allowance, perhaps. Is that true?
That is correct. You could live on your pay in the Royal Tank Corps, but it was quite an effort. You had to go without an enormous lot and work out your finances pretty tightly, because uniform was such a costly business in those days. There was very little that you got from the quartermaster.
This is your dress uniform, I assume.
All
it?
Uniform.
All uniform.
You got nothing.
Could you recall approximately how much you had to pay for uniform those days?
I think my bill came to about £200, something in that nature. And the regimental tailor were Messrs. Flights, and they were very reasonable. And I used to pay back at so much per month, and finally paid it off in about 2.5 to 3 years.
So by and large, you didn't find there was any sort of, if I may use the word, social stigma going into an extremely new arm in those days compared with the ones, you know, were existing.
No, there was nothing of that at all. In fact, we were rather envied at the opportunity to go into an arm which was growing and was interesting and full of new ideas.
Now, did you ever stay with a cavalry regiment, Colonel?
Yes, I was very fortunate. And about a year after joining the 2nd Battalion at Farnborough in 1932, after the young officers' courses, I went to the 3rd Dragoon Guards for an attachment. They were in Aldershot. It was very interesting. I was there just about the time of the end of individual training and on to troop and squadron training. And they gave me a little pony, and I just carried on as a subaltern of the regiment.
When you say individual as opposed to troop training, what is meant by that?
Well, individual training was education, Army Certificate of Education, 3, 2, or 1. And any particular training, like driver mechanic, or that wouldn't of course apply to the cavalry, radio or wireless, as it was called in those days, or gunnery, shooting, personal weapons, and that sort of thing.
So you did part of this training then with the
just the tail end.
How were you treated there? Were you accepted as one of them without any discrimination of any sort?
Oh, very much, yes. They were very pleased to have me and show me all their methods and the way they operated, and early morning in the stables, and then out on Exocet and the Long Valley, or over in the Chobham Hills somewhere like that. And there were no tricks played on you at all. They were all most helpful.
Were there those there who would have wanted to join the RTC, do you think?
I don't think so, no. They were all very happy and very contented in their own particular circumstance.
So from your level, you would say that this idea that the cavalry looked down upon the RTR was in effect, or the RTC, was in effect a bit of a myth at this stage, was it?
A complete myth. It may possibly have been so in more senior ranks, but I can't say for that. But as far as my friends at my rank were concerned, there was nothing. They were delightful people and accepted you completely.
Colonel, now you said this, when you left the Royal Military College, you was then posted to the RT Court Centre, Bovington, weren't you?
Yes, we in January 31, we arrived at Bovington as a batch. I can't remember my batch number. It was a letter. But there were nine of us. Most came from the Royal Military College. One or two from universities. And later on we had one from the Royal Military College in Australia, Duntroon. And we did first a D&M course, about 6 weeks, I think it was, which was very comprehensive and covered general principles and wheeled vehicles and the medium Mark 1 and 2.
This is the Vickers?
The Vickers tank that we were armed with. We then went on to Lulworth for a gunnery course. I forget how long, but about a month, I think it was, where we learned all the weapons, the 3.303 Vickers machine gun and the 3-pounder and the close support gun, and we touched on the Hotchkiss, but only very briefly, the Hotchkiss machine gun. And after that we did a very short tactical course, about a week or 10 days, and we didn't have anything on communications, but of course they were covered generally during the course, both at Lulworth and Bovington, but there was no specific wireless or signal instruction. And we then went on to the Royal Military College of Science at Woolwich for a course of about a year, which covered pretty comprehensively things like physics, chemistry, mathematics, metallurgy, and also practical work in the workshops and visits to places that would be of interest to us in the way of manufacturing and that sort of thing.
Coming back, Colonel, if I may, to the Centre Bovington for the moment, how applicable did you find this course after you'd left and joined your battalion?
It was very useful indeed, because especially the general principles. And we had a really good grounding on general principles, both of driving and maintenance and gunnery. And that, I think, was the key to everything.
Was the equipment you were using there the same as you were used when you got to your battalion?
In a way it was. Of course, there was more improvisation in the battalion. The equipment was probably a little better at Bovington, quite naturally, that specialised in training instructors how to instruct. And their method of instruction was excellent.
What about the tactics? I know it was a short course you were on, but what sort of tactics were being taught? Were they just sort of field tactics, or were they wider in application?
No, it was the tactics we had at bombing were very simple. How to operate as a troop, as you were, as a section, because this was before the days of troops, as a section, and general movement and attacking in cooperation with other arms.
This is in both the medium tank and the light tank, would it be?
No, because the medium tank was really the only one that they bothered about. The light tank and the light battalion and its operations followed the thought of a book called Modern Formations, which came out that very year. And I can't remember that we were ever taught anything about the operation of a tank brigade.
Can you recall who wrote the book?
Brigadier Broad wrote the book Modern Formations, which was which really laid down ideas for the formation of doctrine in later years after experience with the tank brigade.
Colonel, what was the atmosphere and spirit of Bovington in 31? Did you capture any of it?
Yes, it was tremendously enthusiastic. It was it really was quite extraordinary how the recruits in the depot reacted to sound instruction and good training. They were a sight to see on parade. They were quite extraordinarily good.
When you say on parade, do you mean sort of drill? Are we talking about
in their drill and turnout? Mm.
So a fairly high standard was set then for the RTC.
An enormously high standard, and it was maintained throughout all the regiments. But Bovington really was first class, and their enthusiasm over instruction in the D&M school was really quite extraordinary. They were all enthusiasts, every man and every instructor and every officer.
What about accommodation in those days?
Accommodation wasn't all that good. There was a brick mess for the officers, which was very nice indeed. And there were some brick quarters, but we weren't fortunate enough to be accommodated in them. We had some wooden huts, fairly close to the mess, about 200 or 300 yards. They were very comfortable when you were there. But they were light. They were heated by coal stoves, and the coal ration didn't go very far if there happened to be any cold weather. The furniture was good, but on present day standards it was fairly crude. Washing facilities were the ordinary jug and basin with hot water provided from a boiler which operated in the bathroom. It was a sort of cauldron-type boiler. You lit a fire under the cauldron, and there was a tap into the bath. and a cold tap as well. It was very sensible, but pretty crude on today's standards.
So you had to be fairly dedicated in a bit.
Yes.
You live near Bovington, Colonel. Are any of these huts now standing? Still standing?
No, none of the officers' accommodation huts. They were all gone.
Now, having stayed for about 3 or 4 months at Bovington, you went on to the Royal Military College of Science, you say?
Yes, at Woolwich.
31-32. What sort of standard did they set there? Was there an end-of-course test and exam? Were you weeded out at this stage?
No, there was no weeding out. It was purely an instructional course. I don't recollect any exams. I think there must have been some, just to see that you had not spent your whole time in London and had paid some attention to the instruction. But it was really a magnificent course if you paid the normal attention and did the normal amount of work. You couldn't help but benefit from it. And of course, there were other advantages too. The fare to London was a shilling return, and the messing in the Royal Artillery mess was a shilling a day. So that was a great advantage. We were turned out each morning for riding and riding instruction and riding in the Royal Artillery school, riding school, which wasn't all that of a sort of difficulty, because the Royal Artillery recruits turned out very early in the morning for their pre-breakfast drill, and they woke you up anyway, because they all shouted the various numbers for the operations they were doing, you know, one stop, two, and you couldn't remain asleep, so it was just as well to get up and go and ride.
You say, Colonel, that you went horse riding in the morning. Do you think this was an attempt to give you some of the social graces, perhaps, of your colleagues in the older arms?
No, I don't think there was anything like that. It was really a matter of exercise. Before spending the day rather cooped up in halls of study and things like that and laboratories. We all did enjoy getting out and getting some fresh air usually before breakfast, and it gave you an appetite, and perhaps it wasn't so good at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but it paid a dividend.
How many of the members on the course could actually ride before they came into the army?
All of them, I think. Yeah. And of course we had a pretty good basic instruction at the Royal Military College.
Did you find possibly that this course at the College of Science was too academic, perhaps?
No, I don't think anybody thought that. Possibly on top of your sort of school examination efforts, and then the Royal Military College, and then the courses at Bovington, people were beginning to get a little tired, but I think they did thoroughly enjoy it and realized what a good course it was.
Colonel, you said earlier on that some of the members of your battalion came in via university.
Yes.
Did you find that for them that was an advantage over you who'd come through the military college, or vice versa in any way?
I think possibly In some ways it was an advantage that they were perhaps freer in talking to their military superiors. They were not quite so hard as we were physically, but they soon toned down to it. And of course some of them were blues at their particular game at the university, and they were in good shape. But no, I don't think there was any particular advantage from coming from the university, but we all managed to get on the right wavelength together, and there was no problem like that.
Some of these would have degrees, would they?
Yeah, so they all had a degree of sorts.
In what subject mostly would they come in with?
I can't remember, but I don't think any of them were mechanical sciences. They were all classical in some way.